Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it's really refreshing!
Good morning. It is 8:08 on WCCO Radio. It is sunny, 73 degrees, headed for a high of 89 today, and hopefully a little break for our plants, for our flowers, for our vegetable gardens, and those lawns. Our expert this morning is another Laura Irish Hansen, who is the statewide extension educator for resilient managed horticultural landscapes at the University of Minnesota Extension Service. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm ready to just kind of be done with this heat. I like it. I'm not complaining, but I don't like the stress that comes along with it when it's just too hot. How about you? How's your yard and your garden and everything looking, and how are you managing all of this?
Yeah, so obviously with the smoke, I wasn't going outside and watering as much. And so thankfully here, you know, where I live in the cities, it cleared up pretty good yesterday morning. So I was able to go out really early and really get those containers and those wilted plants. So they're looking okay this morning. So hopefully after radio, I'm going to go back out, finish watering a couple of areas that maybe didn't get to yet.
So does the smoke do something to our plants? Does it stress them like it stresses us?
So actually, I'm so glad you brought that up right away. So one of our amazing colleagues, Natalie, actually has an entire post all about managing wildfire smoke and the impacts to mostly crops, but the same thing applies to our trees, shrubs, garden plants. And that's on, you can actually find most of that information on extension.umn.edu. But really, it's not the smoke that is the issue that's really going to be changing what our plants are doing. It's pretty fascinating. The smoke in the air can actually help plants photosynthesize more.
Whoa.
Just because of the way the light is being moved around.
Wow.
But that kind of, it's a balancing act with the amount of ozone, because sometimes the wildfires can cause higher ozone, and ozone can actually damage plants. So, it's kind of interesting, but it's not the plants I'm too worried about in most of the state. It is the people, the health of the people as they're going outside and trying to take care of their plants. So if you are really close to the wildfires, and you're actually having ash settle on your plants when it's safe to do so, you know, and you can, if you can put on a N95 mask, if it's still pretty bad air quality, you can use a hose to just rinse the ash directly off of the plants. But other than that, there's not much you really need to do to help those plants kind of get through.
Let's talk a little bit about the heat, too, and how plants are able to recover if they haven't been watered as much because we haven't been out because of the smoke. Like, how do they recover, and are we still going to be in good shape for the rest of the summer here?
Yeah, so for most people, the plants probably aren't at what's called the permanent wilting point. When plants get to a point where they can never bounce back and they're inevitably going to be, they're going to likely die, that's called the permanent wilting point. I really doubt most people have let their plants get to that point. The thing that I would be cautioning people to do is not to just water a little bit, especially those plants in containers. Because if you're just watering a little bit and you're just getting the top inch or so of the soil moist, you can actually cause those plants to dry out too quickly and then they'll die over time. So make sure you're giving them a really good watering. Stay there for many seconds, not just 1 or 2 seconds. Some of those pots, I water some of my pots and I have a really nice hose volume, so amount of water that comes out. I'll be there for 10 to 15 seconds, walk to the next one, and then I go back and make sure that water's draining through.
Yes.
So make sure you do that.
And I'm glad you brought up the permanent wilting point because there's so many parallels just with humans. Like, we reach our permanent wilting point sometimes too. You just have to know when enough is enough sometimes. But when, like you were saying, in the smaller containers, make sure you're doing it thoroughly so those roots are cooling down and getting what they need. All right. It is 8:12 on WCCO Radio. We are listening to Smart Gardens, and our expert from the University of Minnesota Extension Service today is Laura Irish Hansen. We are taking your calls and your texts. The number for both of those is 651-461-9226. Let's head to the text line, Laura. This texter asks, should I continue to fertilize when it is so hot and dry? What do you think?
That really depends, and I know that's not the answer people want. But in containers, when we are watering more frequently, in particular in containers, as we water more, we actually can have more of those nutrients will kind of flush out the bottom of the container. That's one thing that can happen. So you might be using like a half rate of a fertilizer, just depending on how often you're watering those plants. Now, for our perennials, things in the ground, I would not be fertilizing right now when it's so hot. The plants aren't really in active growth. Most of them are trying to just hang out through the heat. So I wouldn't worry too much about the perennials that are in the ground for fertilizing.
Should we mow the lawn in this heat?
I would not. Nope.
Just let it go, huh? Yep.
Just for now. Wait till it cools down. And most turf in Minnesota that we're growing are cool season turf grasses. They're not in active growth when it's this hot. They're actually more likely to be growing in the cooler edges. So if you think of, you know, our growing season like a little bell curve for the heat, it's better to be mowing, or you'll be more likely to have more growth on those turf grasses on the late spring, early summer, and then going into fall.
And can you actually damage the lawn if you do mow right now?
If it's unnecessary to mow, I just wouldn't do it. Yeah. It'd be great if John was on. He would have a perfect answer for that.
Okay. It is 8:14 on CCO. We are taking your lawn and gardening and flower and plant questions for Laura Irish Hansen with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. The number to call or text is the same, 651-461-9226. Back with more of your questions, including one about some red lily bugs. We're going to find out what to do about those when we come back. And we're taking your calls and questions on Smart Gardens this morning with our University of Minnesota Extension expert, Laura Irish Hansen. The number to call or text is 651-461-9226. Let's go to Marcia in Burnsville on the line. She has a question about tiger lilies. Good morning, Marcia.
Hi, last week someone called in and said their tiger lilies have gotten eaten very badly, and I've had the same problem. And I looked it up, and they're red lilium beetles, and they're a little smaller than ladybugs. They go under the plant leaf, and they're voracious. All you need to do, though, is treat them like Japanese beetles. Get a thing of water and detergent and just drop them in. The other thing is that they hide in their poop, apparently, and their poop is very black, and you have to get that, too. The only thing I can do about it right now is put it on a calendar to remember to check for this, because I've just gotten tons of my lilies almost skinned. So that's the story on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. We appreciate the call. What do you think, Laura? Is this a pretty common problem with these red lily bugs?
Yeah, and they're really common on true lilies, so not things like sometimes we call canna lilies. They don't really bother those. Or day lilies are not true lilies. They're in a totally different genus, actually, which is fun. But so if you do have a true lily, they can, the larval stage, so the little caterpillar stage, can actually defoliate lilies pretty rapidly if you have a bad infestation. So yes, you can definitely, like the caller mentioned, you can flick those off into the bucket of soapy water. I don't like dealing with the frass or the feces, so yeah. I prefer to spray things off with a hose when I can, as much as possible. And if you can get them at the egg stage, the eggs are actually kind of interesting because they're laid on the underside of the leaves, and they're kind of this orangish red color, like a rusty color sometimes. And so you can actually just, what I like to do is smush them between my fingers.
Okay. Frass. The bug poop is called frass. Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I've never heard that.
I don't want to say it's a kinder way to say it, but it gives people
so
less
frass.
Ick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Another texter is asking about begonias. My begonia hanging baskets are getting a bit overgrown since they've been in full bloom since May. Can I trim these back and still keep them flowering the rest of the summer? They have large yellow flowers.
Yeah, you can trim most of those begonias back. I would never take more than a quarter or a third of the plant off at a time. And I like to err on the side of caution when I'm doing that. And I usually just trim it back about a quarter. Now, when you do that, it's pretty stressful for the plants. There are open wounds. So particularly during this heat, even though your begonias are likely in shade, make sure you're keeping them well watered until they can heal.
All right. I love this text. I have a 10-year notebook with advice from this show. I love it. They call it their flower Bible. And their question is, my yellow flowered potentilla bushes are turning brown near the ground. Do you have any recommendations for that?
Yeah, there are some diseases. I'd have to look them up because, of course, I'm blanking on them right now. That can impact those shrubs. I don't think it's age related, although it could be. If the shrubs are getting quite large, they might be shading, the top growth might be shading out those lower limbs. So I would recommend taking a pruner, a nice clean sharp pruner, and just gently cutting back a couple inches on some of those stems and see if they're alive. So if you see kind of a green color in the stem when you cut it, don't worry about it. The shrub's probably fine. But if it's kind of hard and brown, that just means that those lower limbs might be dying back and you can remove those.
Okie doke. If you have a question for Laura Irish Hansen, give us a call or a text. The number is the same, 651-461-9226. We have Laura for about 35 more minutes, and she's happy to take your questions. Here's another texter, Laura. I need to transplant some asparagus. Any tips and timing suggestions?
Yeah, I would wait. Don't do it during this heat that we're having across the state. I would actually wait, depending on where you're at, until I would say mid to late August is fine to do that if you're trying to transplant. Now, we do have a page on growing asparagus in home gardens. I would highly recommend taking a look at that on extension.umn.edu because it'll really help you visualize how deep to plant those plants when you transplant them.
Right. And that extension website is so helpful, you guys. Just take a look. You won't believe the wealth of knowledge on there. Extension.umn.edu. Everything from what Laura is talking about to the blog she mentioned earlier on just kind of how the smoke has been treating our plants and our lawns. And I think the message I'm getting from you this morning too, Laura, is in this heat and in these conditions, it's kind of a good idea just to let things rest a little bit. They will come back for the most part, but for now, we shouldn't be doing a whole bunch of mowing or moving of things, right? Should we just kind of take it easy right now, just like the plants are being forced to take it easy?
Yeah, take it easy, but remember to water. And try not to water in the heat of the day. That's not only for the plants, but it's also for you and safety to stay cool. It can really help also to make sure that when you're watering most of the time, like I'm going to make up a percentage here, but I'm going to say 95% of the time, we do not want to be watering the leaves of the plants. We actually want to just be watering at the soil line because most of the water the plants are going to take up are coming through their root system. If we have wet leaves, and particularly with this heat, we can actually increase a lot of plant disease issues.
Okay.
And we're seeing a lot of plant disease issues this summer just because of the humidity and high heat. So just a reminder, try not to get the leaves wet. Get to as low to the ground with your hose as possible.
Right. I was out of town for a few days late this week. I left on Thursday morning right after watering, and I just got back yesterday evening, maybe around 6-7 o'clock. So I went out to check my plants and water. And I'm a very new gardener, Laura, as I think we mentioned before, where this is the very first year I've actually planted some vegetables, and I'm having some good luck, which is fabulous. I have little cherry tomatoes I've already harvested. And then last night when I went out, I actually have my very first in my whole life, my very first little mini cucumbers. And
oh, that's so exciting.
It was very exciting. And I know that's probably not a big deal to people, but for me who has never grown a vegetable, I was so excited about this. But I'll say that the vine of cucumbers was completely wilted and dried out, just even for me being gone a day and a half. And once I watered, now this morning, they looked fine again. But man, they really can just suck up that water, and the heat can evaporate things so quickly. I was really surprised by that.
Okay, I have something for you to do, and anyone who's listening who's growing cucumbers or zucchini.
Yep.
So when the plants get too wilted from, not from heat stress, so the plants, those have huge leaves, and so sometimes in the middle of the day, they'll actually naturally kind of, they'll lose some of that moisture in the leaves on purpose to decrease the amount of surface area the sun is hitting. But if there's wilting because of water stress, that's different. So if that's what happened, and you watered a bunch, go look at the new fruit that is on the plant, because you might have a glutton, like a big ball at the base where that fruit is attached to the plant itself.
Whoa.
And then you'll end up with like a little skinny tail. And that's from inconsistent moisture for that plant while it's fruiting. So it's just a fun thing. You can still eat that fruit. It's fine. But the shelf life is a little shorter.
Okay. Well, good to know. I'm going to eat at least my first two little cucumbers today for my lunch. And I hope they taste good. My tomatoes do. So I have no idea if how I'm growing these impacts the flavor at all, but so far, so good for me. All right, we have another caller on the line for Laura Irish Hansen with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, Boris in Minneapolis. Go ahead, Boris.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, my kids and the neighbor kids, they set up a tent in my yard. You know, it's like a 10 by 15 size, I would imagine. It's pretty large. And I don't know how to tell the neighbor that who owns the tent, so he, you know, it's his kids or whatever. And I'm just wondering, it's been there for almost a month now. Is that going to kill my grass? And how do I go about telling the guy I want the tent down? I'm trying to be folksy, you know, neighborly and stuff like that.
Tricky.
I don't want to kill any more grass, though.
Yeah. Well, I am. I don't want to say I'm not a social scientist. that's maybe not my expertise. Yeah, that can be kind of tricky especially when it's on your own property. And it's, you know, at least for me, if that happened, I think that for most of my neighbors, we have a pretty good relationship. So I could be like, hey, I need to move this because, you know, it's killing my turf and I don't want to have to pay and spend money on replacing this turf in this area that, you know, our kids play in. But yes, if it's a tent, especially one with a bottom, you can kill that turf is mostly from drought stress, because there's probably not that much moisture hitting it, depending on where you're at in the state. Sorry, I missed that on the call. I should have wrote that down, but, yeah. So if you leave, it's kind of like what I call, those little like blow up kiddie pools, right? If you leave that for too long, that can end up killing and damaging a lot of the turf as well. So moving around any type of shaded structure can really help decrease the damage to that lawn.
Very good. Let's go to Jean in Eagan on the line. Good morning, Jean. What's your question?
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, it's refreshing!
Keep cool out there, folks. It's gonna be a hot one.
We the people love summer baseball. The food is over the top. The cheers come from the chest. We came with friends, but we met new ones. We have seats, but we're standing. They say it's anyone's game. But from what we can see, it's everyone's. Baseball for the people.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning. I've never grown tomato, or rather the small cherry tomatoes. But my son called me yesterday and asked me if he needed to put some sort of support system in place for all these tomatoes that's blooming on his tomato plant.
Yeah, they start to go bonkers, don't they? Mine are not staked, Laura, but do you recommend that?
Yeah, so this is so fun. I'm so glad you asked this. So tomatoes, there's two main types of ways that tomatoes grow. And it's called indeterminate growth and determinate growth. Now, most cherry tomatoes, there's always an asterisk, right? We have exceptions for everything. Most of them are indeterminate growers, which means that they are going to send off a little flowering stalk and then continue growing up. So that stem will grow and grow and grow. If we had a longer growing season, you know, like some places a little further south, you can grow tomatoes that are over 10 feet tall in a single year just Whoa. Because the plants never stop growing. So yes, supporting them is really great, getting them up off the ground. There are a lot of diseases that tomatoes get, particularly on their leaves, that are just hanging out in the soil, waiting for that soil to splash up on the leaves. So when we have tomatoes that are laying on the ground, there's more higher likelihood that you'll end up with some of those foliar diseases on those tomatoes. So yeah, definitely having any way to get it up off the ground. Now at this stage, it sounds like it's pretty big. I don't recommend going to the garden store right now and buying those little like tomato cages that kind of they get skinnier at the bottom. Or narrower at the bottom, because you're probably going to break a lot of branches off doing that. Mm. So they have some that are squares that kind of open up and you can kind of, you know, bring around the plant. You definitely want another person to help you with that. I do something called the Florida weave. It's my favorite system, but that's because I grow my tomatoes in a line. It doesn't really work as well if you just have a single tomato. But
alrighty. Yeah. Thank you, Laura. Good advice. It is 8:32 on CCO. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, we have a bunch of texts that I want to get through. If you have a question for Laura Irish Hansen with the University of Minnesota Extension Service, Here is the number, 651-461-9226. Back in a moment with a question on Japanese beetles and blackberry lilies. Stay with us. And good morning. It's 8:37 on WCCO. I'm Laura Oakes, joined by Laura Irish Hansen with the University of Minnesota Extension Service on Smart Gardens this morning. Couple of quickies on the text line here, Laura, and then we have a call from Joyce in Gaylord. First of all, do Japanese beetles cause permanent damage to a tree if you don't get rid of them or if it is a large infestation? What do you think, quickly?
Yeah, so it depends, but usually Japanese beetles are not going to be the reason that that tree completely dies. It's pretty rare in comparison to them doing some foliar feeding and the trees bouncing back. Usually those trees are going through some other type of stress, like drought stress or compacted soils, those types of things. So don't put up the pheromone traps. You're likely going to attract more Japanese beetles, and they're pretty clumsy little guy, little beetles, and so they don't always make it into the trap, and then they go down the soil, and you can actually cause more problems in future years by putting those up.
Got it. I finally got some blackberry lilies to bloom. They're small orange iris-looking flowers. Now I read they may be considered invasive in Minnesota. What do you think?
Yeah, so blackberry lilies are typically the plant themselves, like an individual plant is usually pretty short-lived, but they do seed pretty prolifically, and they'll kind of colonize an area. And that is typically really in just really moist soils. It's pretty unusual for them to do that in very dry sites and in dry site conditions. So if you do have one in your home garden, they are beautiful, beautiful plants. You can deadhead them, which is recommended anyway, which just means once the flowers, those petals have faded, you can actually just trim those off. And that will prevent any of that seed production. Now, when you do that, just know that, again, those plants are pretty short-lived. So it might just be something you enjoy for a few years if you're really good at deadheading all of those little flowers.
Now, when you're deadheading, Laura, are you actually cutting with a garden scissors or do you just pull them off with your hands?
Yeah, most species, I'm using a nice pruner. I don't even use scissors because scissors can actually crush stems and then you might have poor wound healing. And some species are very sensitive and there's lots of diseases and pest pressures. So we want to have a nice clean cut. And I would just get bypass pruners, which is the most common type of pruner.
Okay, great. Let's go back to the phones. We have a call from Joyce in Gaylord. Joyce, what's your question for Laura?
Laura, I'd like to plant a coreopsis. What is a good one that blooms most of the summer? Is Moonbeam, or are there others?
I love coreopsis. There are so many cultivars and species to choose from. And so Moonbeam is a very popular one that a lot of people put into their gardens. It's pretty reliable for most people. Now, sometimes if it's not... I'm having a hard time phrasing this. As long as it's well-watered and established, they usually will come back over winter. I would recommend, especially in that first year or two, to cover them up with leaves or some type of mulch just to protect those crowns over winter and then pull back those leaves or mulch in the spring for that new growth to come back through. But yeah, there are a lot of them. I would definitely recommend going to your local nursery or garden center and seeing the different cultivars that they have, because those nurseries are going to carry ones that those local nurseries carry ones that do well in your area.
Good. Thank you for the call, Joyce. Back to the text line. Between the squirrels, bunnies, heat, and inconsistent watering, my sunflowers in large pots are a total wipeout. Is there any alternative crop or flower you could suggest that I could seed now? Is it too late to plant something from seed now?
So to have the same effect as sunflowers are typically a pretty big, showy plant, and putting them in containers means you're watering maybe three times a day, particularly during this really hot time and how big the containers are, just for those who might still have them in containers. The rest of the growing season's pretty short for, you know, we are a little over halfway through July. So when you do want to go choose something, if you're choosing by seed, you're going to choose plants that are going to be at maturity, is usually what it says on the packet, in 50 days or less. So I think your best bet would actually be going to a garden center and grabbing like a transplant of something like a zinnia might be a good alternative for you. They have Gallardia, those blanket flowers that are annuals that are really pretty as well. But yeah, we're getting a little late for a big showy flower, most big showy flowers. There's some smaller flowers you could plant, but it won't give you that same effect.
All right, back to the phones. We have a call from Judy in St. Paul. Go ahead, Judy. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. I have a question. A week ago, I lost a large maple tree in my backyard. It was I had planted my whole garden back there to shade that area. I mean, for shade. So I have four hostas in particular that I'm starting to see a little bit of, I think it's called leaf scald. It's the leaves are getting a little crunchy on the ends. I went on a website and read, water them, give them a good long drink a couple times a week. I realized this fall I may have to relocate, but I'm wondering if I'm doing the right thing in the interim.
Yeah, sorry to hear you lost your shade tree. And yeah, that can be an expensive endeavor, not only to lose the tree, but then all those garden plants that you have that are meant to be grown in shade. So yeah, the best thing you can do if you want to can have those hostas. Now, I'm going to say this, hostas are pretty resilient on the whole. So if you did want to dig them up now and move them to a shady location, as long as you keep them really well watered, they'll probably be just fine. So if that's something that's bothering you to continue to see that they're getting crispy leaves, you can definitely do that with hostas. Now, there are some other shade plants that I would recommend making artificial shade for if they're high value and you're trying to keep some of our other shade plants. But yeah, keep the hostas really well watered. They're going to continue to get that sun, it's pretty much sunburn for those who don't know. And plants aren't like us. They're not going to grow new cells over those sunburn areas like we can with our skin. Those leaves are going to be permanently scorched. So you can also remove those if it's bothering you.
Thank you for the call, Judy. We have another caller on the line, Catherine in Blaine. Good morning, Catherine. What's your question?
Good morning, Laura. I have a question about, I have a cone flower, and I'm trying to bring them over the winter. Now, this one is in a pot, so I want to take it out. What do I need to do to make it, give it the best opportunity to make it through the winter?
Yeah, so you have a couple of options. So it's harder to overwinter them in containers. So I don't recommend doing that pretty much anywhere in the state. I would actually get them put into the ground if you can. And make sure when you do transplant them into the ground that it's at the same level that the plant was in the pot. So don't have that potting soil mounted up above the ground level, and also don't bury that plant deeper because the plants won't do well. They'll probably die if you do that. So I would just get it in, keep it really well watered, and continue to keep it really well watered into fall, especially if we have a dry fall. And then if you're worried, I'd be a little worried about the crowns getting cold damage, but my biggest fear is actually rabbits. Rabbits will go and eat those the crowns of those cone flowers in the fall and winter. So actually putting a cage around them can be very helpful to protect those cone flowers.
Super. Thank you, Catherine. Another caller on the line real quick, Laura. Peggy in Maple Grove. Good morning, Peggy. What's your question?
Good morning. It's about how so many people in cities, and as a matter of fact, ours, are mulching the bases of trees, piling up the mulch tight to the bark of the trunk of the tree on the bottom, and then piling up a huge bowl. And I know that's very bad for the trees. And then when they do end up taking some of the mulch away, the tree is all, the bark is split. Would you speak to that, please?
Yes. So I, too, when I see a mulch volcano, well, maybe I shouldn't say too. I don't know if you do this, but it kind of rips my heart apart. It's one of the biggest things that I go around and talk about, actually, is proper tree planting. For that includes proper tree depth, how we actually dig holes, which is really important, and then proper mulching. So for anyone listening, if you take one thing away from today, I hope it's this. It's the rule of 3-3-3, and for mulching, particularly around trees and shrubs. So we want to have mulch that is 3 inches deep, no more, no less. And that's not 3 inches new every year. That's total from the soil level up to the top of the mulch. So maybe, you know, in a year, an inch or so gets composted down. So you might add another inch around. So 3 inches. The other thing, we want to make sure that it's, if you can, a 3-foot radius. Now, some people will tell you diameter, but the bigger the radius around that mulch is from the center of the tree, the better, because we want to decrease soil compaction and equipment and people from getting up close to those trees, particularly when they're young. And then the last one is pulling it 3 inches away from the trunk or the main stem. So we actually don't ever want mulch right up against trees because it can girdle those trees long term. So when you see those piles of mulch going up the trees, it can actually kill trees pretty quick in a couple years, but sometimes it takes 10, 20 years for that tree to go into full decline and die. So it's a slow kill when we use those, or if we do mulch volcanoing. So yes, I agree. Wholeheartedly, it's really hard to see, it's really hard to watch, and I could probably spend my whole life just going around and fixing mulch.
I'm wondering, well, when you do see that and you say it rips your heart out, do you want to just go up there and like fix it and move it yourself and just leave a note on the door and tell them you were killing your tree, I fixed it for you?
Yes, I do, but there is a real aesthetic thing that people have, you know, for it. So it's a delicate thing and a delicate process to be able to talk to individuals. Now, it's very different when we get to go talk to cities or to landscape companies, and they're really receptive usually.
Good.
To hear about the science and why we have the recommendations we do.
Super. You're listening to Smart Gardens on WCCO Radio with our expert today, Laura Irish Hansen from the University of Minnesota Extension Service. We're taking your calls and your questions on our text line, 651-461-9226. Couple of texts coming up after the break. Stay with us. 851 on CCO. Yes, you are listening to Smart Gardens on WCCO Radio. Today, our guest expert is Laura Irish Hansen from the University of Minnesota Extension Service. Lots of calls, lots of texts. Let's get back to the phones, Laura, to Terry in Plymouth. Terry, what's your question for Laura?
Mealybugs and leafhoppers on some of my perennials in my garden. I've been spraying the mealybugs with insecticidal soap, and I notice that the leafhoppers are on those and hop away as soon as I spray. I don't know what the connection is between the two or how do I treat them.
Yeah, that can be pretty tricky. Mealybugs, for those who don't know, they kind of look like itty bitty dirty cotton balls, like little specks. They're usually a whitish to gray color, and they're frequently found where leaves and stems attach to like the main parts of the plants. And mealybugs, yes, the best thing we can do is physical removal. So that's spraying off with a hose, particularly outside. Depending on the plants and your IPM strategies, if it's a really bad infestation and something that is high value, there are some systemic insecticides that can be used. But always remember that if you're using any type of pesticide, the label is the law. So make sure you're following it and using it only on plants that it's labeled for. For leafhoppers, yeah, I'm so sorry I don't have a good one for you other than using insect cages, and that's early in the season to get those physical barriers put up.
Thanks for the call, Terry. Another texter, what can we plant to replace our hawthorn and crab apple? Cedar rust wins. We can't get rid of it. Lost too many trees already.
Yeah, so if you're hoping to plant a different type of apple or crab apple, that kind of thing, we do have a new rust that is to us that we have, where there's actually current research going on. It's called Red Star Rust. So if you're curious to learn more about cedar apple rust and Red Star Rust, check out our website at extension.umn.edu. There is going to, in the near future, a publication will be coming out with cultivars, so types of crab apples in particular, that are resistant either to red star rust and cedar apple rust. So be looking for that in the next year or so. That'll be available. And we'll make sure we have, once that research is completed, we're going to make sure that gets up on the website so you all have access to that.
Great. Another text from Steve. Someone told me to take the spent flowers on my gladiolas, push them into the base of the plant because they are self-seeding. Is that true?
Gladiolas do produce seed. It depends on how many different types you have. They could actually potentially cross and you might not get the same colors coming up. So if that's something you're really hoping for, just know that you might have some variability there. You don't have to push them back down into the ground necessarily either. You can kind of, you can snip them off if you want and scatter them. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different ways to do it, but.
Super. Another texter. The leaves on the bottom of my trumpet vine are yellow. What can I do to help it?
Yeah, they could just be older from age and turning yellow. If it's just the older leaves, it could be a nutrient issue. But usually in trumpet vine, we're not too worried about that. It could be a sign of stress of some type. But really, my hunch is that it's just they're the older leaves and they're dropping off. Without seeing a photo, it's kind of hard to diagnose that. If you are concerned, you can use the Ask a Master Gardener, where you can actually submit photos and you'll have someone who can actually look at those photos of your trumpet vine and help you with those diagnostic questions. And that is also on our Extension website.
Got it. And that address is extension.umn.edu. All right, another tomato pest question. Potato bugs are stripping the stem of my tomato plants. What can I do?
Yeah, so when you have any type of insect that is going and they're foliar feeders, they're eating those all of those leaves, the best thing you can do is physically remove them, blast them off at first if it's a really bad infestation. But yeah, that's the best thing you could do on those edibles is to physically remove them. You can flip them into a bucket of soapy water to help kill them much quicker as well.
All right. And this texter, I think this question is relating to when you were talking about mulch and the 333 rule. They're asking, what about if you have rocks going around your trees? Do the rocks need to be 3 inches away from the trunk also as well if you have mulch?
Yes, you definitely don't want rocks going right up to the stems of those plants. You want to make sure that, and particularly with trees, there's something called the root flare. So when you see some of those, particularly like the big established trees, you might see that the roots kind of flare out or the base of the trunk flares out before it gets to the ground. That should not have any mulch, organic mulches or rock mulches on those flares. We want to make sure that that's pulled back. So if you do have rock mulch, and particularly if you have a layment, normally there's some type of fat landscape fabric under that rock mulch, that gets cut a little wider so that those plants don't get girdled over time.
Okay. Should I not be spraying the leaves on my young apple trees? They are about 8 feet tall.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/weight. safety.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney Refreshing!
Gear from MLBShop.com helps you show everyone what team you're with before you even say a word. So people start asking you things locals and fans know, like,
you with the crew?
You from the D?
Where'd you go to high school?
Your dad put you in brown and gold?
You see skins, girl?
You get your Dodger dog?
Siempre 305?
You see Big Dumper 60?
Do you see him put Vladdy in the jacket?
How about 47?
You see Judges 62?
Shohei's 50-50.
The gear says it all.
Cut from the city. Go to MLBShop.com.
MLB trademarks used with permission.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would not. Yeah, we want to make sure that we are keeping the leaves as dry as we can. Obviously, Mother Nature does their own thing, right? So we get rain and there's higher humidity, but we don't need to be contributing to that.
Okay, very good. We're wrapping up our calls and texts for Laura Irish Hansen with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. Another great morning, Laura. We got through a lot of different topics. Any parting words as we're kind of still having a few more of these hot days, maybe not the intense heat like we've had the past few, but what should people keep in mind now going forward?
Yeah, just make sure that you're consistent with your watering, particularly if you're growing vegetable or flower crops, so that the soil doesn't get too dry in between, because it can actually decrease your fruit and flower yields.
Very good. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk again soon, Laura.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep, you got it. Coming up on CCO, we will catch up on the national news from ABC. What's going on locally with Al, of course, and then get those home improvement questions ready for the one and only Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction coming up a few minutes after 9 o'clock. Stay with us on CCL.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney Refreshing!
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.